This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. With the water lapping on the shoreline, state and federal officials triumphantly announced agreement over how to clean up Lake Champlain at a recent press conference on Burlington's North Beach. Vermont's Natural Resources Secretary Deb Markowitz sounded like a cheerleader as she explained what's behind the plan to maintain this jewel in the state's crown.
The TMDL is the technical work that's behind our clean water plan. It's how much pollution we can continue putting in our beautiful lake while meeting water quality standards. And it's not a lot, and that's part of the challenge. And we're up to the challenge because we've got this all-in philosophy.
The TMDL that Secretary Markowitz is referring to stands for total maximum daily load, as in how much of a pollutant a body of water is allowed to receive, and it's regulated by the Clean Water Act. The state is going to have to significantly reduce the phosphorus and other runoff that's currently winding its way through Vermont's waterways and into the lake bed. But not everyone is convinced that this plan is going to do what the state says it will. All this week, VPR is airing a series called Downstream. It's focused on water quality in the Lake Champlain Basin. So today on Vermont Edition, we're going to go into the plan a little bit deeper with Alyssa Shurin, newly named Commissioner of Vermont's Department of Environmental Conservation. Nice to have you with us, Commissioner.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And with us from Boston is Stephen Perkins, the Lake Champlain Project Manager for the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. Stephen, it's nice to talk with you again.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And I would like to start with you, Stephen, if you don't mind. The EPA pulled its support of the Lake Champlain environmental regulations, that the 2002 TMDL, back in 2010, and said that the state's pollution budget was not sufficient to keep the lake clean. So remind us what was wrong with the state's 2002 plan.
There were two things that were of the greatest concern. One is that there wasn't enough assurance that the reductions in non-point source pollution, that's the runoff from the landscape, particularly from agricultural lands, that there were enough measures to actually make the reductions that were called for in the earlier plan. The second area of concern was had to deal with how much uncertainty there was in the modeling that EPA had done that the state had done back in 2002. And we found that there sort of wasn't a sufficient margin of safety, as we call it. And it was on the basis of those two things that we decided to revisit the TMDL.
So, Commissioner Shurin, what's taken the state so long to get a new TMDL in place? The EPA pulled its support in 2010, as I mentioned, and of course now it's 2015.
Well, this has been a long collaborative process with EPA over the last few years to come up with this document. And this Lake Champlain TMDL comes on the heels of the passage of the Vermont Clean Water Act last legislative session, and I'm really pleased with where we've ended up, because for the first time we have the resources and the authority to get the job done. And I think the passage of the Vermont Clean Water Act also helped to give EPA a level of assurance that we're going to be able to, you know, implement the Lake Champlain cleanup plan. It also created resources that were really needed in terms of getting projects accomplished on the ground that are going to reduce phosphorus into the lake.
So it was that question of authority that wasn't there before?
That question of authority was not there before, and the resources are new. They're, you know, they're new resource created through a property transfer tax and some private funding that we can put out into projects on the ground around Vermont to not only reduce phosphorus and pollution going into Lake Champlain, but help all of our waterways statewide.
And so that's about $10 million that's coming at the forefront to help sort of implement these new plans, and then ongoing money in the future.
It's about a little over $5 million annually. We're looking at the first 2 years in one lump sum as $10 million that we're starting with right away.
So, Stephen Perkins, is the EPA now satisfied and happy with Vermont's proposal and Vermont's draft plan for how to clean up Lake Champlain?
So, Jane, let me specify a couple of things. One is your question about the TMDL. It was actually EPA's responsibility to produce the TMDL, which provides those specific allocations that must be met to clean up the lake.
That's right.
And it's the state's function to come up with the implementation plan to figure out how to meet those targets. In developing the TMDL, we certainly did evaluate the measures that were included in the state's implementation plan. We constructed models that would be able to simulate the kinds of measures that we had seen In the 2014 version of the state's implementation plan, and were then sort of backed up by Act 64. And so we were in a good position to specifically evaluate how these measures would affect the concentrations in the water. And it's our finding that the measures that are in the state's plan and the extent of those measures is sufficient for us to be able to find that the allocations can be met.
We're talking today about Lake Champlain cleanup and the state's new plan, the EPA also supporting how we're going to get there, how we're going to get the lake clean and keep it clean. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. What do you see on Lake Champlain? How serious is the pollution issue from your perspective? And do you think the state has the right plan to deal with what is considered a pretty serious problem? Call 1-800-639-2211 if you'd like to weigh in. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Commissioner Schoen, this can get really wonky really quickly, and we are going to get into the weeds on some of the details of this plan. But just to give us the Cliff Notes version, the sort of overhead version of what's in this new plan, can you highlight the really key things that people should know about what the state is planning to do?
Sure. Well, first I should say, I mean, we know Vermonters love Lake Champlain. They love it for boating, for fishing, for swimming. And the Lake Champlain Basin is large. It's all the way up to Canada. It's out to Cabot. It's south. It goes all the way down to south of Rutland. And all of those rivers and streams in that basin drain down into the lake. And so when we worked with EPA to create their Lake Champlain cleanup plan, their TMDL, we had to look at where are all the pollution sources coming from. And so, you know, we found that the biggest source of pollution is actually from agriculture at 40%. And, you know, then we have other.
And that's an average for the whole watershed you're talking about there.
Yes, that's an average for the whole watershed. Our charge was to reduce phosphorus pollution by 34% into Lake Champlain. And so we needed to go source by source, look at developed land, look at roads, look at stormwater from, you know, erosion from stream instability, even forested land, looking at the logging and roads on those lands, and come up with, okay, well, what is the plan that we believe, the implementation plan that we can do to actually reduce pollution from all those sources? And there'll be some changes on the ground that will need to take place. You know, farmers will need to do buffers or cover crops or fence livestock out of waterways. Municipalities will do inventories of their roads and look at they should be doing green stormwater infrastructure so that the rain can seep into the ground instead of running over the ground, collecting all that sediment and then dumping into the lake. So each segment will do its part to reduce pollution. We've taken an all-in approach to get here. We have had that drumbeat in terms of the message for the last few years, and it's all in from all sectors of the that are creating the runoff and the problem that of the sediment going into the lake. But then also, there's been really an all-in approach with regard to the this administration. So we have the Agency of Transportation under Sue Minter's leadership in with us, looking at how are we going to manage our roads better. We have Secretary Chuck Ross as a true partner in agriculture, looking at what can we do to even look at small farms for the first time and establish a certification for those farms to reduce their impact on water quality. And the work, a lot of the work has already begun, but this plan really kind of embodies not only past practices that have been working, but also future practices that we need to start now.
Stephen Perkins, from the EPA's perspective, is it important to see exactly what the state plans to do? You mentioned implementation and regulation is the state's purview. So do you think the state has the right approach here with that all-in kind of attitude that Commissioner Schoen is talking about?
Absolutely. I think the state has taken that perspective from the outset, and I think it's been very helpful that they want to take measures on a basin-wide level, and I think that's helping. It's definitely helping in the segments that are closer to achieving the water quality standards, and it's sort of the base that we need in the more challenging segments where we'll have to ask much more of the agriculture community in the north and the south parts of the lake.
And are you satisfied with the money that the state is raising in the short term and their plan for long-term fundraising to do all of the implementation that's going to be required here to get the lake cleaner and keep it clean?
We are satisfied that in the next few years that the state has the resources that they need, both the dollars and the staffing, I think, is particularly important, to put the programs in place, the general permits that have to be written, the revisions to the management practices in agriculture and in forestry, all of those building blocks that need to be constructed before they can, you know, sort of be applied on the landscape. We're very optimistic that the resources are in place to get that done over the next 2 years, 2.5 years.
Do you look as closely at the plan as to say something like the Agency of Agriculture, which is adding staff positions or changing around its the way it's organized to have staff positions that are geared towards regulation of these new farm rules for small and large farms? Do you look at that and say, we think you need to have this many positions as opposed to what you've planned? Or do you take a step back and say, all right, we'll see how it's going?
I think we take a step back in that the state knows best how many people they need to implement particular programs. It's not EPA's sort of area of expertise. And I'm trusting that the administration has sized that adequately for the next couple of years. And I think we'll all learn over the course of those 2 years whether or not those resources are sufficient when it comes down to, you know, doing the implementation everywhere of all these new programs.
Listeners, our number, if you'd like to weigh in on what you think is going to work or not work in the state's plan, if you've been reading about the new TMDL, if you've been looking at how the state and the EPA are on board with this new plan, we'd like to know if you are. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. If you're a farmer, do you see these regulations as good, leveling the playing field, everybody on board? Do you think they're going to affect your bottom line? Let's go to Timothy, who's calling in from East Berkshire. Hi, Timothy. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. The Missisquoi River is right in my backyard, and many times during the year it's about the color of British racing green. I totally understand that what needs to happen here. St. Albans Bay is shot. What concerns me, however, is that I can see our agriculture agrarian-based economy going more towards a real estate / development economy. I mean, if I was a developer, that would be a perfect angle for me. I would be like, you know what? We're not going to put that much phosphorus in the ground, in the water. But it concerns me very, very much because I certainly do not want to see that.
Timothy, thanks for your call. Alyssa Shuren, Commissioner of the Vermont Department for Environmental Conservation, what do you think about Timothy's concerns?
Well, I think the good news for Timothy is that we have a lot of resources going into agriculture right now. Senator Leahy has been a real champion for funding in the state that is going to agriculture. So, you know, tens of millions of dollars we're talking about here. And the Agency of Agriculture has already started that work with farmers. So they have gone out and already talked to about 121 farms in the Missisquoi Bay now, today. I just talked to Secretary Ross about this yesterday. And those inspections are leading to a set of recommendations from the agency on water quality practices that those farms should take. They're also able to pair those farmers with funding resources to get the job done. And you know, farmers care about water quality. And I was just up in Swanton last week talking to a group of farmers about this. It was a group of farmers who were there to talk about water quality. They're paying attention. They know that what needs to be done, and they're looking forward to doing it in the most part. And for those that, you know, don't take the steps that they need to, enforcement is an option. But we might not need to get there in many of these cases because of the resources and the work of the Agency of Agriculture.
Although, you know, we ran a story on VPR yesterday about small farms and mm-hmm. how they're going to be impacted and how they're trying to prepare now. And one of the comments that we received on that story was from somebody who has a lot of horses and said, I don't even understand whether I fall into these rules or not. Is it agriculture? You know, if I'm running an equestrian center, what do I have to do? I don't feel like the concept of small farms has been clearly defined to me. So it sounds like there's still at least some outreach to be done, but, you know, perhaps some gray area in the rules that people are pretty concerned about.
Well, that is a great question for Secretary Ross. I know that they are either if they do not have a clear definition of small farms, I'm sure they're working to get one, especially as they roll out this new program. As they've been going out and talking to these different farms, I know they're giving really hands-on feedback to the different folks that they feel like are falling under that small farm definition. And so I would encourage that person to, you know, reach out to the Agency of Agriculture and ask them, do I fall under these new regulations or not? And the Agency of Agriculture will be doing a lot more of these inspections all up through the Missisquoi Bay and throughout the watershed to varying degrees.
What about the burden on towns? One of the things that you mentioned is that towns are going to have to really look at roadways and road maintenance. And there are a lot of towns that have a lot of dirt roads who are concerned now about how they're going to maintain those dirt roads to make sure that those runoff questions are solved, but also how they're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. This will be, without a doubt, this is a big ask of municipalities. To help them through this process, we have developed partnerships with the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, the Regional Planning Commissions, and then internally at the Department of Environmental Conservation, we have pulled together what we're calling a municipal task force on water. We just had two of our first meetings in the last few weeks. And those folks are, you know, we have stormwater experts and financing folks and folks that know how to leverage funding and wastewater treatment operators. And we're trying to create, and in partnership with the Agency of Transportation, we're creating a link there, a one-stop shopping experience for municipalities to enter into this conversation and work with us to assess, okay, when I look at infrastructure, the Lake Champlain TMDL is just one entree into a broader infrastructure conversation. And when these municipalities look at their infrastructure needs, they'll be asking the questions, okay, well, how do I pay for this? And how do I prioritize these needs? And so we are working, you know, across with different partners across the landscape and with other agencies to try to create that one-stop shopping experience to figure out once they get down to their prioritization and the price tag that's associated with that, how do we leverage the most amount of money to help support these municipalities? Mayor Weinberger and I were just speaking about this a couple of weeks ago up in Burlington. They're one of the hardest hit areas in terms of the cost. And, you know, we're committed to helping City of Burlington, City of Rent, and so many cities and towns across Vermont that will need to be engaging in these conversations.
Does that go towards wastewater treatment as well? Because sure, certainly Burlington has a lot of costs. But when we talk about the impact on municipalities of trying to update their wastewater treatment plants, municipal wastewater treatment plants, that's going to cost a lot of money. And it's not clear that town voters are going to be excited about the non-sexy bond measures that are going to be needed to update wastewater treatment.
Yes. Folks love water quality, but when it comes right down to paying for it, it is a hard conversation to have. If, you know, we talked about the size of the basin, how large the basin is. Within that basin, we have 59 wastewater treatment facilities now. When you look at how the TMDL, the Lake Champlain Cleanup Plan, will impact wastewater treatment facilities, 13 of those will have short-term needs, and the cost for the upgrades is about $78 million. And so those will be some of the areas we focus first in terms of helping them identify those needs. What can they do things that are cheaper, you know, to address the issues? And if we get to the big price tags, how can we leverage the maximum funding for these communities? Because these are tough conversations, and we want to be a partner in figuring out the resource question.
Stephen Perkins, what's your perspective on that? Because EPA has been very concerned about wastewater treatment as it relates to Lake Champlain pollution in the past several years.
And we were very sensitive to the governor's clear plea that EPA look carefully at the wastewater treatment plants and not require reductions where they weren't a meaningful part of the problem. And although there's the often quoted statistic that overall the wastewater treatment plants contribute 3 or 4%, there are five segments of the lake where they contribute 15% or more, and that's where we put our focus. And that's why of 59 facilities in total in the lake, it's a much smaller number where the focus will be. We want the money to be spent where it can make the greatest difference.
We're talking today about the state's plan to clean up Lake Champlain. The Environmental Protection Agency is on board, and together EPA and the state are trying to get the word out about what's actually in this draft plan. We're hearing about it today on Vermont Edition and hearing from you as well. Weigh in on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. Coming up, we'll hear some critical or concerned voices on the plan. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Alyssa Shuren is the commissioner of Vermont's Department of Environmental Conservation. Stephen Perkins is Lake Champlain project manager with the EPA. They're with us today talking about the state's draft plan to clean up Lake Champlain. EPA and the state are holding informational sessions for interested Vermonters through the next month, and we're trying to learn when and if this plan will actually clean up the lake as it aims to do. You can share your questions or thoughts with us. Call 1-800-639-2211. 1-800-639-2211. Or post on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. And let's go to Dylan, who's calling in from Hyde Park. Hi, Dylan. Go right ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, for these new rules and regulations, I have a family farm. We milk about 400. What classifies as a large farm and a small farm?
Thanks for the call, Dylan. Commissioner Shuren, I know that you said Chuck Ross, Secretary of the Agency of Agriculture, has a better handle on that. But can you help Dylan out?
You know, Secretary Ross is looking into defining small farm if they haven't defined it already. I would encourage you to reach out to them. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer to your question on that.
Dylan, we'll see if we can get you an answer. If we do, we'll post it at vpr.net, see if we can get Chuck Ross to weigh in there or find it. We've talked about this many times, so we can probably pinpoint something for you, so check back on our website. Let's go to Joe calling in from Grand Isle. Joe, go ahead.
Since New York State and Quebec shares the shoreline of Lake Champlain, and in previous years I had called the Department of Environmental Conservation to report some runoff from some of the fields in my community that were going into Lake Champlain, and the individual I spoke to said that one of the problems that the agency faces that basically the other bordering states or provinces don't have their pollution plans in sync with Vermont's planning for pollution of the lake. And I was wondering whether this new plan that you're discussing incorporates that issue.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Stephen Perkins, can you tackle this, the question of how all of the various stakeholders, including New York and Quebec, come together on making sure Lake Champlain is cleaned up?
I'll take the first shot at it, and I think Alyssa may be able to help as well. It was the Vermont portion of the TMDL that was challenged by CLF, and that had to be redone. And so the focus of your program and these plans is on the Vermont portion of the lake. We asked New York if they wanted to revise their portion of the TMDL at the same time that we were reopening the Vermont one, and New York politely declined at that point. And so what we have done in forming the allocation is we kept New York's allocation exactly the same as it was in their 2002 TMDL, the one that's on the books for the New York portion of the lake. So they still have to get to the same target. And the way we have modeled the lake, you know, includes all of the segments, whether the border is in Canada or New York or Vermont. So we've checked all those things out to make sure that the water quality standards can actually be achieved.
But is it true that Vermont is the largest contributor to pollution in Lake Champlain?
There's no question about that, but that's also the dominant portion of the water body is in Vermont, and a big chunk of that sort of actively used landscape is in Vermont.
Let's bring another voice into this conversation. Chris Killian is vice president and Vermont director of the Conservation Law Foundation. CLF sued the state of Vermont over the 2002 TMDL, the plan that served as the previous guideline for the conservation of the lake. And that's really what got the ball rolling on this new plan that's been in the works for several years now. Chris is on the line with us. Nice to talk with you again. You there, Chris?
Hello.
Hi, we got you. Good. So CLF is responsible in a large part for this plan's existence in the sense that, as we've talked about, it really got things started to come up with a new TMDL. In early press on this plan that's come out, you demurred, saying CLF hadn't had enough time to have an official response, hadn't really looked at the plan yet. I imagine you have now had time to look through the plan. So what's your initial reaction?
First, I want to apologize because my phone line seems to be cutting in and out. So fair warning.
Got it.
Only heard a little bit of what you just said by way of a lead-in, and I do apologize for that. But we have had a chance to look, take a preliminary look at the new TMDL, and I'd like to commend EPA on the analysis in looking at the lake segments and taking a hard look at where the pollution problem is coming from. And again, want to underscore at the outset that once again this year we have terrible cyanobacteria outbreaks in northern Lake Champlain. This is a problem that is serious and that I think everyone acknowledges cannot go on year in, year out without solutions being implemented. We have some serious questions, at least at this point, with regard to how Vermont is proposing to get to the targets. Some of our concerns include looking at the assumptions with regard to how much phosphorus reduction we would get from retrofitting town roads, particularly juxtaposed against the fact that we think that much, much more than is proposed in this approach as of right now could be gained through retrofit of large parking lots and commercial and industrial facilities in the watershed. We're disappointed that so much of the burden seems to be put on very aggressive and we think very difficult to achieve retrofits of dirt roads in the watershed when it appears that commercial activities will only receive a pretty light touch with regard to retrofit. And we remain concerned that wastewater treatment plants throughout the basin will essentially be allowed to expand how much phosphorus pollution they're putting in the watershed for a significant period of time before having to see retrofits. Some will see retrofits earlier, but there's just no more room for additional phosphorus pollution in Lake Champlain. And so we have some concerns. We'll be presenting those concerns to the agencies in the public comment period, and we hope that they'll be considered.
So, Commissioner Schoen, what do you think about Chris Killian's initial concerns here as he's mentioning them today?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for your comments. Chris Killian of CLF has been a longtime advocate on these issues and, a welcome partner in this conversation. As we get to the implementation phase, and look at the Lake Champlain implementation plan that the department put forward that really grapples with a lot of the questions that Chris is posing. We welcome you, Chris, and into that conversation, and thank you for committing to submitting comments and having a dialogue on that. Because I think those technical questions have to do with some of the modeling that's taken place and some of the scientific decisions that have happened. And we should just get all those right folks to the table and have that conversation. This is the exact right time to be having the conversation as the public comment period moves forward, and the meetings are just starting tonight up in St. Albans, tomorrow in Rutland and South Burlington. And so we should talk more about that. And we're looking forward to getting more done as quickly as we can.
But presumably you've thought about these issues because it has taken the state a long time and a couple different go-rounds to come up with the plan that you have in place. So, sure, it's one thing to say there's public comment period, we can address these more, but that question of dirt roads versus, commercial parking lots is one that clearly you've thought about and you've already put that that analysis into place?
We have. I think it goes to the numbers. I mean, we did some modeling on where we thought we were going to get the biggest reductions of phosphorus. We should present that information and look at that and then hear the concerns with regard to that. Based on the numbers we looked at and the modeling that we've done, we came out with a certain decision. We need to essentially go back to that analysis and look to see, Chris, when you have your comments on if that answers your questions, essentially.
Chris Killian, I hope you can hear us, so maybe I'll repeat this twice. But, you know, your bottom line here, is this a good plan? I can't imagine you'd say it's a good start because, you know, what you're saying is this is a serious problem and we need to be doing more than just starting. But is this enough to clean up our lake, to deal with the big problems that you're concerned about and have been concerned about for a couple of decades now?
Well, I guess I would say that it's going to be difficult for us to accept the notion that Vermonters would be told that the kind of horrible conditions that are presented right now on the Georgia shore, in St. Albans Bay, in Missisquoi Bay, in other areas cropping up around the lake, will continue for decades. I can't imagine that that would be acceptable for Vermonters. And to the extent there is an effort to try to rationalize that and explain it, I just feel for the people that own camps in those areas and love those areas and want to use and enjoy those areas, because the conditions are truly deplorable. They can't continue for decades. We need much more aggressive action than that. And I guess similarly, I think we need to as we're considering which sources we address, we need to move toward aggressive implementation of programs across the board, because this is all model-based. There is a lot of uncertainty in the modeling, and I can't imagine, at least from my organization's perspective, going another 5, 10, 15 years and facing the same discussion again with a lake that's in worse condition than we're seeing now. So I'm an eternal optimist. Otherwise, I couldn't stay in my job for as long as I have. But it's time for real action. And so our bottom line is water quality and getting to clean water on behalf of all Vermonters.
Christopher Killian is state director of the Conservation Law Foundation. He's been working on Lake Champlain cleanup for a long time. Chris, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to EPA and the state.
Stephen Perkins is with the EPA. We're talking with him today, as well as DEC Commissioner Alyssa Shurin. Stephen Perkins, how do you take the concerns of somebody like Chris Killian and Conservation Law Foundation into account as you now go through the path of these public comments?
Jane, we take them very seriously, as we will take seriously the comments we receive from any and all members of the public who are interested. But obviously, CLF has a long history here and a great understanding of the issues, so they're a very important voice for us to consider as we look at all the public comments that we receive.
How might the plan change then because of the comments? I mean, this is not sort of a public comment period where people are really saying the plan should actually look like this, and you wholesale change the plan. So how does EPA sort of put those into what happens next?
So in terms of comments we get, the question is whether or not we set, for us, is really whether or not we set the targets, the right targets, targets that are adequate to meet water quality standards. There's a whole parallel discussion about what actions are taken to sort of meet those targets. So we'll be particularly interested in comments we get as to whether or not we, you know, sort of got the modeling right and that the numbers that we have are what will lead to attaining the water quality standards. While this whole parallel discussion goes on mostly within the state over whether or not they got the right measures and they're doing them at the right pace in order to sort of hit those targets.
Commissioner Shurin, Chris Killian mentioned cyanobacteria and algae blooms in certain parts of the lake and how distressing that is for people who live and recreate near that part of the lake. And that's a concern for you as well, I know.
Oh, it's a real problem. And my heart goes out to you know, folks with lakefront property or are trying to swim on Lake Champlain. And it's absolutely true. We need to do something about it. And that's what we're trying to do here with the Lake Champlain cleanup plan and with, you know, some of what is going into the Vermont Clean Water Act as well. And we need to get the work started right away. And that's what we're committed to doing. I also want to say that with EPA, we have an accountability framework in place where they'll be checking in on our progress. And it's not 10 years down the road where they're going to check in for the first time. 2.5 years in is a check. At 5 years is also a check. And we need to be proving that the project, that the work that we're doing, the way that we're running permitting programs and the projects that we're funding out on the ground are reducing phosphorus and are cost effective for the state, actually, as well. We have to report that to the legislature. But we will have those metrics and we'll be tracking, is this working or is it not, and calibrating as we go. But I agree completely. We need to get started. And the things that have been working over the past few years, we need to do more of that.
I want to inject a note of not caution here, but to remind people, and maybe you can give us the long-term outlook. This is going to take a long time. This is a 20-year plan, but actually getting phosphorus out of the lake will take much longer than that. I mean, are we looking at in our lifetimes here?
It's hard to know exactly when we won't see these blue-green algae blooms any longer. It is hard to know. We also have climate change as another factor in this conversation. But we have to do what we know works to reduce phosphorus in the lake, and then we have to track the results, and we have to start right away and monitor and do the science and the modeling that we need to figure out, okay, is this working or is this not, and calibrate accordingly. We can't just keep living with this problem without taking strong action.
That's Alyssa Shuren. She's Commissioner of Vermont's Department of Environmental Conservation. Thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We've also been talking with Stephen Perkins. He's Lake Champlain Project Manager with the Environmental Protection Agency. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you, Jane.
Coming up, schools are required to serve more healthy choices to students, but students aren't forced to eat those healthier options, and it turns out they aren't. We'll learn about a new study showing that students in two Vermont schools are actually eating fewer fruits and vegetables than before the law went into effect. That's next up on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. School lunches now have more fruits and vegetables, but a new study shows that doesn't mean that kids are actually eating more healthy foods. The lead researcher on a UVM-led study says kids are often throwing those apples and carrots right into the waste or compost bin. Still, she says she hopes the federal mandate will be renewed. Sarah Amin was a researcher in nutrition and food sciences at the University of Vermont and lead author on the study. Sarah, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
So, in fact, you found that students are putting these healthy options on their trays, which is what they're supposed to do now. They're supposed to be given these foods, but they're actually eating fewer fruits and vegetables, and they're wasting significantly more than they were before the law went into effect. Did that surprise you?
Yes and no. The students in our study were familiar with an environment where they had the option of not needing to select a fruit or vegetable with their meal. And so consumption decreased, but it decreased by only about one tablespoon. So we are fairly optimistic that if these guidelines continue, we can see this consumption actually level off and hopefully increase, especially with younger children coming into the program.
So how did you actually do this research?
Yes. So we did this research over 21 school visits before the guidelines were implemented in spring 2012, and then after the guidelines were implemented in spring 2013. And we used a rigorous validated dietary assessment method known as digital imaging. And so this allows us to capture students' fruit and vegetable selection, consumption, and waste before they enter the line, and then after they finish their meal and before they approach the disposal area. So just as the name implies, we capture a pre-image after the child selects all the components they want to put on their tray, and then we capture an image of their waste after they're done eating. And through that composite image of selection and waste, we're able to derive fruit and vegetable selection, consumption, and waste by the students.
And you were doing this research in two Vermont schools?
We were, yes.
And these were schools that had a significant portion of students who took free and reduced price school lunches?
Yes, we had between 40 and 60% of the students qualifying for free or reduced price meals, a marker for socioeconomic status.
And did you choose those schools because they were because of the socioeconomic status related to these children, or because you wanted to make sure you had a good enough sample of kids who were taking school lunches?
Yeah, we wanted a really robust sample, and so that was really what played into our selection. And we also wanted different cafeteria environments to work with as well, so those factors played into our selection of these schools.
So, Sarah, do you think that this could just be what's happening at these two particular schools in Vermont, or are you comfortable extrapolating the results that you got from these Vermont schools to how the law is working around the country?
We are in no mean, shape, or form extrapolating. Again, this is done in two schools. It's a very small sample, and it's just one snapshot. So we're cautious to generalize these findings nationally. In fact, we encourage more institutions to collect, rigorous validated data of children's fruit and vegetable consumptions in a broader array of geographic and sociodemographic samples.
So then what is the value beyond what it can do to help these two schools improve the uptake of healthy foods by their students?
Again, it's just a snapshot. So we hope that it can be used in a constructive way. And again, not just looking at the data per se, but these two schools in particular, looking at the overall environment of school meals. So looking at factors such as how much time do children have to eat these meals? Do we need to look at those factors as well? And what other things can we do to encourage children to actually consume the vegetables and fruits that they're selecting? So again, it's one snapshot, and we're hoping that it can inspire other efforts to promote fruit and vegetable consumption under these new guidelines.
Why do you think students are actually eating slightly fewer fruits and vegetables rather than just unequally? Why is there a little bit less consumption?
So in our study, one of the main reasons for that, again, are those students who prior to the new guidelines perhaps didn't select a fruit or vegetable, and we did have a higher proportion of students that weren't eating anything that they selected. So those zeros, per se, in the data can drive down that mean consumption. And so really focusing on those children that didn't consume any of their selections would be a great place to start to see, you know, do these students need more exposure to these fruits and vegetables to help to develop their preferences? As we know, more exposure to fruits and vegetables can help children develop a preference for these food items.
So you think potentially just more time is needed?
I definitely think more time. More time and efforts outside the cafeteria environment as well. So, promoting nutrition needs to be done in the home environment, needs to be done in the retail environment. So parents can model consumption of fruits and vegetables, and that can, you know, help encourage children's willingness to try and maybe finish eating their fruits and vegetables. So the onus should not just be placed on the school. But again, we need to recognize the positive efforts that schools are doing to feed children overall and to provide these healthy items for them.
As I teased in introducing you, you do think that this law should be renewed. It's up for debate in Congress in September. And you think despite the fact that what you found in this snapshot suggests that kids aren't eating more healthily and there's more waste, which presumably is costly to schools, that it's still worth keeping around and doing that kind of educational outreach that you're talking about.
Of course. I think we need to stay the course, and we can't give up yet. Consumption only decreased by about one tablespoon. I do see the waste side to it, but we need to be mindful of what these guidelines were implemented for, and they were to address a childhood obesity epidemic, to feed children in a healthy and positive way, and to promote behaviors for the long term. And so I do think we need to stay the course and sort of suffer this short-term pain for a long-term gain.
So when you or if you were to retrack kindergartners, you know, who were kindergartners when this law was implemented and are maybe in fifth or sixth grade in a couple of years, mm-hmm. you think you might see them having more fruits and vegetables that they're actually eating because this is just something that's de rigueur for them?
We are optimistic that that will be the case. Again, they're coming into this program and all they will know is that they need to place a fruit or vegetable on their tray. And I think that in the future, schools will get more savvy with different strategies to feed these children. Again, on-the-ground efforts, so school cafeteria personnel and staff will recognize what types of fruit and vegetable offerings really hit with kids. And so I think it's important to develop those practices and so that we can really encourage positive dietary behaviors for these younger children coming into the program.
All that being said, I'm hoping that you can give some of our listeners a little bit of a pep talk, because this is potentially going to depress a lot of Vermonters who feel very strongly about fresh and often local foods in their schools and on their children's plates.
Yeah, so again, we are only pushing for these guidelines to continue, and Vermont is the poster child for farm to school and for school gardens and for other strategies to cultivate healthy dietary behaviors in children. And this is by no means a way to discourage those efforts. It's just a way to promote further strategies to encourage positive behaviors in our children.
Sarah Amin is now doing her postdoctoral studies at Tufts. She was the lead researcher on a UVM study examining why federal mandates for more healthy choices in school lunches aren't necessarily translating into better eating habits by kids. Sarah, thank you very much for your insight.
Thank you for having me.
Stories about New Orleans 10 years after Hurricane Katrina have been prompting Vermonters to also reflect on the 4 years since Tropical Storm Irene. Both of those anniversaries are this weekend, and tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll talk with UVM sociologist Alice Fothergill, who studies how people recover from and change in the aftermath of natural disasters. She focuses specifically on children. You can tell us what changes you've experienced in the years since Irene. Write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and join us tomorrow. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.